91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today's hour serves up quite a different listening menu than our usual, centered on the universal human skill of storytelling. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. We have such rich and intricate language capabilities and pass down folklore and traditional stories to link generations. Storytelling still has some vibrant and spellbinding creators, of course. You'll hear a few this hour. We'll visit with spoken word raconteurs, find out how they keep the art alive, and hear some captivating stories told live. Writing Class Radio is an online way to hear stories and to learn how to make them more effective. Also, Lip Service is a South Florida group which embraces creative storytelling, a mix of theater and literature. First, it's NPR and regional news.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman is today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Well, this hour is all about the spoken word with a group of talented storytellers, writers, and educators. We'll hear a couple of stories during the hour to boot.
Also, listen for information about the podcast Writing Class Radio, as well as an update on the acclaimed Miami-based Lip Service events.
With us now is author, storyteller, producer, teacher, and podcaster, Andrea Askowitz. Welcome back, Andrea. Good to have you again.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of energy over
great.
There.
Yes. Jumping jacks and everything. And it's FIU Creative Writing Adjunct Professor Nicholas Garnett. He's a freelance editor and has written for Salon.com, the Florida Book Review, and other publications, and a producer of Lip Service. Welcome to you, Nicholas.
Thank you.
And we'll meet each of two talented and interesting storytellers a bit later, so stay with us.
Okay. I was going to talk to you about all the changes that have happened in your life, Andrea, since you were here last, but instead I'm going to ask you this, and I'll ask both you, Nicholas. It seems to me that storytelling has become so prevalent. Like, all of a sudden, I'm thinking not only about what you're doing, and you've been doing for a long time, but The Moth and Snap Judgment and This American Life, and WLRN calls itself the storytelling station, and the list goes on. So I just want to know, I know storytelling is as old as time, but is something going on, or is our time particularly conducive to wanting to tell stories, or has it just always been that way?
Wow. I think
you could pick either one of those.
Exactly. I think both answers are yes. Stories are as old as time. But I also think that today we're in a moment where people really want to understand each other or don't want to understand each other, but stories connect. So a true personal story helps people understand each other. And right now, we need that more than ever.
Is there an element that now we're trying to trim our writing so much with texting, almost like a telegraphic form, that we also should be able to kind of expand and take a breath and slowly tell a good story?
What's so interesting about what you're saying is, like, short form, Twitter, that is so popular, but long form's popular too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, long reads. There's a lot of long personal, true personal storytelling happening online, in journals. So they're both true.
How do we differentiate between stories that are written as prose, memorized, practiced, rehearsed, and told, mm-hmm. and a storyteller who spontaneously tells a story? What's the difference? Are they all called just stories?
I think they're all storytelling, but I think that Lip Service is an interesting, it's a venue that's different than what some of the other storytelling kind of operations are, because Lip Service is read. So
Lip Service is almost like a hybrid form mm-hmm. of storytelling, because unlike The Moth or Snap Judgment, where people get up and those stories are rehearsed, but they're not read, Lip Service, they are written, edited. You'll hear from Josephine in a little while, who went through, you know, extensive editing revision process, so that when you're on the stage, what you're reading has been gone over and edited down to the word. So they are two different kinds of storytelling, right. But it's really coming from the same place.
But Bonnie, we were talking about this earlier. What matters more, the story, the actual words, or how the story is told?
And interestingly, because the last time you were here, you were still with Lip Service.
Right.
And you
right.
were just, I think, winding down, but you were still with it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you just written that book or published the badass. Oh.
Oh. She said.
She said. But I read it, so it must be okay.
But that book.
Right.
And, but we were talking before about that Lip Service, you say the words are more important, whereas.
I would say that's true. Nick, I want to ask you if you think that's true. Like, in a storytelling event like Lip Service, where every storyteller is reading, I think the story has to speak loudest. But then on a podcast, like Writing Class Radio, or like the radio, like Moth or Snap Judgment, a storytelling event where it's less, where it's not read, then I think the storyteller can get away with being charming and funny and a lot of other things. They might say something kind of dodo, but if they say it well, then that scores higher points.
How would it affect a story listening to it on radio or visually seeing someone reading?
Well, that is
story.
The difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, watching a person tell a story, then what their physicality matters. But I don't know.
I think it could enhance or be a detraction, I guess.
That's true. I just think a podcast, or I think it's looser.
In Lip Service, where the person is standing up there, it's strange because they're reading the story, so it's not like a physical performance, but yet the personality still comes through, and people will connect emotionally based on how that person delivers or how they look or how they move. It's still there.
Well, let's talk about each of these entities, because last time you were here, you were still with Lip Service, so lots of changes since your last visit. What is Writing Class Radio for those who are not familiar with it?
Writing Class Radio is a podcast of an actual physical writing class. So it's like a radio show. And on the podcast, you hear true personal stories told by the students in the class. And then you get a little bit about how to write your own stories. That's Writing Class. It's the best podcast in the world also.
Now, why did you want to do it in this format versus teaching a writing class?
I would love to defer to Allison about why we started Writing Class Radio, but I do want to say from my end, I like an audience, like a big audience. And I love the Lip Service audience, but it maxed out at 600. And I wanted to take it bigger. I wanted stories to reach more people. And now we hit 4,000 every time. So and the audience on a podcast is unlimited, really. We can hit millions.
And how can people hear it?
They can hear it. Take out your phone. If you have an iPhone, there's a little app that says podcast. You just search for Writing Class Radio, or you can listen on writingclassradio.com. Or if you have Stitcher or any other, wherever you get your podcast, Writing Class Radio.
And Nicholas, how's Lip Service these days?
Lip Service is great.
I see now that it's produced by the Miami Book Fair.
It is.
That's incredible. What? How does that change things?
Well, when Andrea decided that she wanted to devote herself full time to Writing Class Radio, to Writing Class Radio, I had been sort of pinch hitting for the co-producer of Lip Service. Esther Martinez, who was busy having children,
and
so I lots of them. And hi, Esther. I'm sure she's listening.
Hey.
So we didn't know whether or not there was going to be life after Andrea, as far as Lip Service was concerned. And I do a lot of freelance work for Miami Book Fair, and so I thought, well, look, the missions here of spreading literature and storytelling and love of stories is there might be a fit, and there was. So they agreed to take it on. And the benefits to Lip Service is that we are associated with the Miami Book Fair, which is now internationally known. So we get a lot of marketing and a lot more attention. We're also, Esther and I teach classes that are offered by Miami Book Fair. So the benefits are we're attached to this gigantic organization with a real full-time marketing staff, for example, and people that do that can generate digital marketing. So in that respect, I think it's really been a great help.
What are these book fair classes like?
They are continuing education. They usually meet once a week, and Esther and I have taught them twice. They're called Learning How to Tell True Stories Out Loud. And basically what they do is they take the lip service process. Somebody comes in with a story idea, or maybe they've generated a little story, and they have to pitch the idea to us. We help them work their way through the story so that by the end of that seven-week class, they've got a 1,200-word story nailed down. And then the last class is a showcase. It's like a mini version of lip service where people and friends come and they tell. It's a recital.
Is 1,200 words 8 minutes?
That's about right.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's still 8 people, 8 stories, 8 minutes.
That's it. That formula that I think Andrea and Esther came up with, time-tested, stories that go on much longer than that tend to drag. Too many more stories than that, you start to lose the audience. So that's we're sticking with
that. It's a
really
good formula.
Yeah.
Nicholas Garnett, tell us a little more about you and your education and what you're about.
I came to Miami, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and like many people, I came to Miami to start over following a divorce in the early 2000s. And
is
I had
this a story we're telling now?
I think so. I was just going to say, no holds barred.
Well, some of what I've written about that period is no holds barred, that's for sure. But I came here. I was interested in writing. I was starting over. I made a random call to the Miami Book Fair because they were teaching a class. Lizette Mendez of Miami Book Fair happened to answer the phone. The next day, I was in the writing class. Before I knew it, I was in FIU in an MFA program. Les Standiford, my mentor, and then I attended some of the lip service shows. Started submitting things, read at some of them, and then all of a sudden, somehow, here I am on your show as the co-producer of Lip Service.
All right. I want to say that 11 years ago, I started Lip Service at Books and Books,
right.
and so Mitch Kaplan is the head of the book fair, and so the book fair just seemed like the most obvious home for it.
Right.
It's always been part. They've always sort of been the daddy of lip service.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking about the spoken word with Andrea Askowitz. She's the executive producer, teacher, and co-host of the podcast Writing Class Radio Now. Nicholas Garnett is a producer of Lip Service. And when we come back, we have two storytellers, Allison Langer, who's also a producer and co-host of Writing Class Radio, and Josephine Phoenix is a singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist.
Woo-hoo!
And we'll meet them, if you haven't already, when we come back. Stay with us.
And 19 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, and we're talking about the spoken word. We're speaking about the spoken word with Andrea Askowitz and Nicholas Garnett, and we're going to get to our readers in a short time, Allison Langer and Josephine Phoenix.
Okay, well, let's bring them on. Why don't we? Let's first introduce Allison. Now, Allison, you also are a co-founder of Writing Class Radio. You're a co-host and you're a co-producer of Writing Class Radio. And you've had a creative photography business for 20 years. You've taught photography, entrepreneurship, MBA from U of M. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
I met Andrea when she taught a class for Miami-Dade, a writing class. And I had just lost my daughter and I was down and out. And I really needed something, and I always loved writing. And when I walked into her class, we felt like we knew each other. There was something about it, the whole class coming together. And after that class was over, at the end of the 8 weeks or whatever it was, 10 weeks, she started her own writing classes. And we all joined up at the same people, the same 10 people, wanted to take her class semester after semester. And then we kept getting these great stories. And I'm like, these stories have to go out to the world. So I said, you need to write a book. And she's like, I am already writing a book. It's taking me 10 years. I'm not writing any more books. So, yeah. So we decided to start a podcast. And it's been 2 years. And it has been so much fun. We take these stories. We share them. People get really excited about sharing their stories. Things that they thought they'd never write, couldn't write. And then after they write it, just blossom.
What does it take do you think? It takes a lot of courage, I think, to tell some of these stories. Other than courage, what would you say a lot of these storytellers have in common?
Fear. Wouldn't you say, Josephine? A lot of fear, and I think a really thick facade. And then once they start writing their stories, it starts cracking. And then once that facade is gone, you feel free. I felt free, and I do. There's almost nothing I'm afraid to say or share, and if somebody doesn't like it, whatever.
So would you say it's in many ways therapeutic?
Very. Yes.
Now, do you take the works as they're being formulated and have the people who are in the podcast class then look at them and give suggestions or their ideas and feedback? And
yes. And the class is a workshop, and the students in the class give feedback for each other.
That can be rough.
I have left crying.
It can be.
I have left crying.
It can be
and
that.
Not spoken to Andrea for 3 days. It's true. And then I come back around and admit she was right.
3 days in a row?
3 days in a row.
Wow.
In a row. Yeah. Because
in a written form, the criticism can be
brutal.
Easily disguised. Misunderstood.
We do have guidelines that are there to protect the storyteller. Like, specifically, we want to know what you want to know more about or what drew you in. But sometimes people step over those guidelines and they start commenting on your life, and you know,
so you do
try to pretty quickly try to nip that in the bud. But that does happen, and every single story is a personal story. So even if someone is just criticizing the writing, the narrator often takes it personally.
Yeah.
Let's introduce Josephine Phoenix. She's a singer, songwriter, musician, actress with Miami and Brooklyn ties, strong background in musical theater productions, and her story, which we're going to hear, I guess is a working title, is Enough Anyway. Welcome, Josephine Phoenix.
Oh, why, thank you for having us and myself. How are you guys doing, Topical Currents?
Good. How are you?
I'm very excited to be here and hear Allison's story and share things that we might all have in common when it comes to storytelling, for sure.
So how long, is this your first story? Is this your first experience with Lip Service?
Yes, I actually took a class with Nick and Esther. As an actress myself, I was toying with the idea of writing a one-woman show. And I didn't really know in Miami where I could start something, even a cousin, of how to start a process as such. And then when I saw this, sharing stories out loud, or true stories out loud, it's very much the theme of a one-woman show as well. So even though it's not the same kind of 1, 2, 3 steps in putting up a one-woman show, but it does get me in the waters of how to really go from writing to how it sounds out loud. And it was a great 7 weeks. And you guys were mentioning about the critics, right? And the writing class starts to feel like a family. And if you know that it's constructive, at the end of the day, you're just trying to get into the meat and potatoes of your story. And you're trying to answer the question of, why do I feel this way? Or why has this haunted me? Or why is there a repetition in this feeling? And people are just really trying to help get the meat and potatoes of the answer of those questions.
So let me ask you. So Allison is kind of said why she wanted to do this. Why did you want to go public with this? Why a public platform? Why not a therapist's office?
I'm already in the public eye. I mean, once you have to have, I have like a, what do you call it, Godiva hair. And I already know that I have to be ready for the public eye at a moment's notice. So it was just something that, as a performer and a singer and all that jazz that I like to immerse myself in, at the end of the day, we're trying to connect with people. And you're trying to find a common ground of stories. And we're all the same. And we're all going through our own little struggles. And by knowing that you're not alone, there's strength in that. And there's community in that. And that makes you feel less vulnerable and more capable, I believe.
Is this a first step for the one-woman show?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely it is.
Well, why don't we listen to a story?
All right, I don't know if you want to, Allison. Yeah. All right, I'll go.
Okay, so this is Josephine Phoenix, and her story is Enough.
Enough. Here we go. Enough. All my life, these words have haunted me. My childhood didn't help. Mom was a Las Vegas showgirl who had dated Julio Iglesias. And Dad was a flamenco guitarist who dated any woman walking. They met in Miami at the height of the cocaine era. At first, they were just partying, and then it became a problem. Little me always wondered why I wasn't enough for them to stop. The rest of my family didn't help much either. Growing up, I'd try to sing, and I'd hear my aunt murmur, "She's good, but she'll never sing like her mother." Deciding to become a singer, songwriter, and actrice has probably worsened my fear. I've had my triumphs. I toured the world as a backup singer with Ricardo Montaner, a famous Grammy Award-winning Spanish artist. I hosted the morning show on 94.9 on iHeartMedia and had a one-season stint on WeTV's reality show, My Life is a Telenovela. But being an artist means that 20% of the time, you rely on your triumphs to carry you emotionally through the other 80% when you're dealing with constant rejection. I was in the positive 20% a few months back when I found myself in the final callbacks to play Gloria Estefan in the Broadway production of On Your Feet. I was in a better place in general. My parents were sober and semi-stable. And I was living in the perfect bohemian cottage with my handsome boyfriend, Antonio. The little voice of not enough had subsided. It resurfaced on a Sunday in February while watching CBS Sunday Morning with Antonio, our legs intertwined on the couch. I said, "Hey, it's my godson's birthday in North Carolina. We should go." Antonio arched his eyebrows. "We can't," he said. "We don't have enough money." I said, "But we will. I'm already training for that new stewardess gig on a private jet." Antonio said, "Josephine, we can't. We've talked about this. You don't contribute enough." There it was. I listed all the things I did to make up for the money I didn't make. Making the house a home, leaving him daily love notes, making dinners, keeping his car clean and free of that old sour sock popcorn smell that I had when we first started dating. All this between countless auditions and training for this new stewardess job. But none of my arguments were enough to convince him. A week later, Antonio surprised me with an early Valentine's Day gift. A road trip to Disney. I thought maybe this is why we couldn't go to North Carolina. The thought diffused any anger I had left from that argument. We took the road trip, laughing and freestyling hip-hop in the car. Then we ran around the park like two teenagers, two best friends. At the end of the night, as fireworks exploded over Magic Kingdom, I told Antonio, "You know, you're my soulmate. And this trip, I'm in love with you all over again." The next morning at the hotel was a sweet one, CBS Sunday Morning, and a passionate lovemaking session. As I headed towards the hotel gym, I checked my phone and saw a message in my Instagram from some girl. It was a screenshot of Antonio's private message to her, an emoji with two heart eyes. The girl wrote, "Your boyfriend has been messaging girls on Instagram. Thought you should know." My insides turned. The timestamp on his message was 8:30 in the morning. Right before we made love, I felt hot, I started sweating, and I ran back to the room, literally shaking. When I confronted him, he shrugged like he couldn't understand what the big deal was. He said, "I just wanted to tell her she was pretty." I wanted to scream, to rant. Wasn't it enough that I told him I was in love with him all over again? Wasn't it enough that we were best friends? Wasn't I pretty enough that he didn't have to message some girl on our vacation? But I just said, "My Broadway audition is tomorrow and I cannot do this." And I boarded a train from Orlando back to Miami. The next day I was in New York. I'd made it to the final five girls to play Gloria Estefan. I auditioned with my sad eyes, but still had a superstar spirit. I walked out of there feeling like I rocked it. Then, as I landed in Miami, I received an email on my phone. Broadway. "Thank you for your audition. Blah, 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 blah. We will not be moving forward with you at this time." That hurt. Well, I thought, at least I'll be jet-sitting in my new job. Bahamas, Vegas, Moscow. But a few days later, another email informed me that I was being dismissed from my new job after a month of training. That hurt too. I hadn't seen Antonio since Orlando. When we finally met to talk things over, he informed me that he no longer wanted to work on this relationship. And it was Valentine's Day. God, that hurt the most. Here I was, 30, moving back with my parents, jobless, Broadwayless, and now boyfriendless. I called my best friend in North Carolina, Monique, my godson's mother. I caught her up on everything and apologized that I couldn't come. Monique said, I'm buying your flight. I said, Monique, I don't know when I can pay you back. She interrupted and said, don't worry about it, Joe. Your company is more than enough. Sparta, North Carolina, here I come. Yeehaw! Mountains, cattle, and trucker boy hats. One of them even asked me if I spoke Mexican. I don't even know what that meant. Monique owned the local and only pizzeria and craft beer bar on the mountain, equipped with an awesome stage. After catching up with my lovely godkids, we went to go see who was performing. Will Massey was a local country singer with a shiny guitar. Monique had told him about me, and Will insisted I join him on stage. But it wasn't my usual crowd. This was a packed house of truck drivers, overalls, and people with missing teeth. I finally agreed to play some covers, but my stomach was still in knots. I had to sing something that resonated with me. I wanna darken up the skies, open the floodgates up. I wanna change my mind, I wanna be enough. When I opened my eyes, everyone was standing and clapping. I took a good look at these unfamiliar faces, and it felt something I couldn't quite describe. At the end of the night, Will Massey offered me a $50 bill. I said, that's really generous, but I can't take it. I didn't play enough songs for this money. Will put the bill in my hand and said, what you sang was worth way more than that. Until that moment, I believed that if producers of On Your Feet on Broadway had picked another lead, it meant I wasn't talented enough. If I got fired before my start date on my new stewardess job, I wasn't impressive enough. And if my ex-boyfriend was done with me, it meant I wasn't lovable enough. It's funny how rock bottom forces you to only look up at the light. Because this wasn't Broadway. I wasn't going to Moscow, and my ex-boyfriend wasn't coming back. But yet standing there in Monique's bar in Sparta, North Carolina, holding $50, I was feeling better than I had in a long time. And I think I started to understand this feeling. Finally, I was enough. Ta-da! Jazz hands.
Okay. That's Josephine Phoenix. Her story was Enough. She's a singer, songwriter, musician, multi-instrumentalist. It's Topical Currents on WLRN, and we're going to come back with more stories and more with Andrea Askowitz and Nicholas Garnett and Allison Langer. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It's today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. And we're talking about the spoken word on this afternoon's program. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that may be quicker, radio@WLRN.org. radio@WLRN.org. And then what do we have next, Bonnie?
Well, we just want to reintroduce that Andrea Askowitz is the executive producer, teacher, co-host of the podcast Writing Class Radio. Allison Langer, also a producer and founder of co-host of Writing Class Radio, which is a podcast. Nicholas Garnett is producer of Lip Service and editor, writer, and adjunct professor of creative writing at FIU. And we were listening to a story by Josephine Phoenix, who's an actress and singer and songwriter and all that stuff. Andrea, I have to ask you, while Josephine was telling her story, you didn't stop writing.
I know. I listen with my pen.
And what were you writing? Were you writing about her story?
I was just keeping track of her story so I could know it. Now okay. I pretty much know it.
Now you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It was about rejection in love and in work, which is exactly what Allison Langer's story is about.
Mm. Well, do we want to listen to that right now? Or?
Yeah, okay.
Can I jump in with one thing?
Yeah.
That, because Josephine talked about the importance of taking a writing class, or the community that was built in Nick and Esther's writing class. And I just want to say that Miami does not have enough writing classes, because it is so true. And I'm talking about memoir writing classes. Yeah. And so I just want to do a quick plug. Writing Class Radio has a community class that Bonnie Berman is going to take starting in October.
After the pledge drive.
Oh, after the pledge drive, right. So make your pledges and get her off the hook quickly. That's going to happen in October. And if you're interested in taking a class with me and Allison Langer, email us at info@writingclassradio.com.
And I want to say that Andrea had a memoir. Her first memoir was My Miserable Lonely Lesbian Pregnancy. And now you just finished your second, which is Attention Whore?
Yes.
And is that going to be the title of it?
Maybe. I don't yet have a publisher.
Okay.
So that stuff changes.
I see.
But right now it's called Attention Whore.
Okay. All right. So now Allison Langer, who also teaches the Writing Class Radio and is a co-host with Andrea Askowitz, has a story, and we're going to listen to that.
Okay. The title is Rejection. Seems an appropriate
common theme.
Yes. I submitted a story to Modern Love. That was a year ago. I worked on the piece in class, then at home. I sent it to a fellow classmate to edit, and then to Andrea to edit again. She said, "It's beautiful. Send it." I was hesitant to submit, but except for the fear of looking like a sucky writer, there was no reason to hold back any longer. The other main character was dead. I wrote of new passion and love and 2 years of hoping to hear Gerald say he loved me. I wanted him to say it first, but I couldn't wait. It just spewed out whenever he held me. I adored him. But it took a seizure, a smashed Tesla, and an ambulance ride for him to say, "I love you." After those words, he officially moved into my house, introduced me to his friends, and began to refer to me as his girlfriend. For the first time in our relationship, I felt secure. The piece was tight, with a happy ending, just like they publish. I was sure it would get accepted. It didn't. Months later, I got an email saying they decided to pass. All that work for nothing. I didn't consider submitting elsewhere. I felt rejected. Rejected like I felt this afternoon, sitting at my desk 4 days after a first date, a coffee date, with a guy I met on Match. He said he would call on Wednesday after his kids went back to their moms. I went to writing class as usual on Wednesday night and kept looking at my phone. I was sure he would check in. The date had gone so well. He was much better looking than his Match picture, tall, with baby blue eyes and a kind smile. His words were smart, and he talked about his kids just enough. He seemed like a great dad. I was casually dressed, jeans, a white cotton sweater, and flip-flops. My hair was wet from the gym. I tied it into a low bun. I felt comfortable with him. He seemed comfortable, too. After 3 hours, he walked me to my car and gave me a kiss on the cheek. I texted Andrea. I had a great date. This afternoon, sitting here at my desk editing photos, I'm sad and deflated. I was sure he would call. What happened? I sent Andrea a text. He didn't call. She wrote back a long list of reasons why he was a complete idiot. You're gorgeous, smart, funny, kind, warm, independent, a great mom. I called my cousin. What am I doing to turn these guys off? She said, if you can't get these guys to call, then I don't know what they're looking for. In moments like these, I question why I put myself out there to be judged and dissected and hurt. I hate Match. I'm terrible at it. I rarely get dates, and when I do, they don't call me back. Is it that I have 3 kids, or I'm too old? Do I have bad breath, or do I talk about myself too much? One guy said I asked him too many work questions. Don't they want me to be interested in their work? This writing and dating and waiting for someone to love my work, love me, is so painful. It's too hard. I want to give up. Who needs sex and love anyway? I look around and I see all these very average people being loved by men who have rejected me. I tell myself it's timing or chemistry, but I'm not sure I believe that. Before Gerald, I was single for 7 years. It's been almost 2 since we broke up, and I've only been on a handful of first dates and no second dates. People who know me say, "I can't believe someone like you is still single." Well, that makes me feel good. At least the people who know me think highly of me. So I wonder, what am I showing to strangers? Last weekend, I was at a party full of married people and one older single guy. My friend Marilyn pointed him out and said, "What about him? He's cute." I'm 47. I would like to be with a man my own age, maybe even a few years younger. I pointed to a really hot guy in his 30s. I like him. Marilyn said, "That's your problem. You need to date older men." When I said I don't find older men attractive, she pointed to her husband and said, "What about John? Would you date him?" John is in his early 50s and he's gorgeous, but I'm no idiot. I said, "Hell no, I wouldn't date your husband. Ew." Then I think, my body's not tight and firm anymore, and I'm still a great person. Writing and dating are so personal, so raw. I read my story to the class, and I wait. I walk into Starbucks, and I wait. Will they judge me? Will they like me? Will they criticize me? Do they really like my piece, or are they just being nice? Was Starbucks guy just being nice when he said he enjoyed meeting me? Was he just being nice sitting at that coffee shop talking and talking to me? Did he know he'd never call me again? Gerald left me on New Year's Eve. I was cooking dinner for us. We'd spoken earlier that morning. He said he couldn't wait to see me and celebrate with me. I bought sea bass. He didn't show up. When I called him, I was angry and hurt. "Where are you?" He said, "I'm not coming over. Ever. You'll be better off without me." Is that a version of "it's not you, it's me"? Who says that? "You'll be better off without me"? Maybe the Starbucks guy is a real jerk and he thought, "This girl's really special. Let me not screw up her life. She's too wonderful to get involved with. I'll just walk away." Yeah, maybe that's it. About midday, the phone rang and it was my coffee date. I was relieved. He apologized for not calling the previous day. He said between work and kids, he was exhausted. I believed him. But after I hung up the phone, I got to thinking about what I'm looking for in my new boyfriend and my next boyfriend. Gerald was not perfect, but he was connected to me all the time. He texted and called, and I knew he was thinking about me, always. I want that. I want to get under somebody's skin immediately. I want them to adore me and need me and want to speak to me even when they're exhausted. I want them to see something special in me. Maybe that's hoping for too much, but I hope not. Maybe there are a lot of things I do that turn men off. Maybe my breath does stink. Maybe the men I like are too young. Maybe I do ask too many work questions, but I want to believe that when I walk into Starbucks, the guy who is waiting for me sees all that and adores me anyway, like Gerald did. Gerald and I were good together. Alone on the couch, eating pizza and watching Dexter, he was my salvation at the end of a crazy day. I thought he was happy too. When he left, I was crushed. I thought he'd come back like before. I proposed a Tuesday, non-date, secret sex night. It lasted a month or so. Then one day, before he got out of his car to walk into work, he shot himself in the head. Nobody saw it coming. He was 36. I wish I knew what went on in these guys' mind when they opt out. Opt out of life and out of life with me. Is there some way to predict the outcome before we go to Starbucks, submit a piece, fall in love? I don't blame myself for Gerald's suicide, but I wish I could have saved him. I can't help thinking that if we had stayed together, he might still be alive. But that decision was not mine to make. I gave him all my love, even when it felt one-sided and uncomfortable. It wasn't a choice. I couldn't help it.
It was Allison Langer. Let's take a short break on Topical Currents. We'll be back with more. And it's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're speaking with Andrea Eskowitz, Nicholas Garnett. We've heard stories from Allison Langer and Josephine Phoenix. It's today's Topical Currents. We're talking about the spoken word. We've been hearing some very powerful stories told by these young women. Tell me, Andrea and Nicholas, both of you do a lot of editing in this. What's the process of editing spoken word and things like these stories and the lip service? How do you go about it?
It's a big process. It requires a lot of us, but it also requires a lot of the storytellers.
And not doing too much, I suppose.
Right. It's also knowing, but having somebody outside, you know, as a writer, Andrea knows this too, having somebody outside of your story looking in that can see the big picture sometimes when you can't. For example, let me just use Josephine as an example. Josephine, as you can tell, is a very polished performer. And so her gift in delivering the story, we never had to worry about that. But Josephine came to us with a series of bad things that had happened to her. This is just a micro example. A series of bad things that had happened to her. And all of them were bad, but we kept asking her, what is it that is linking all of these bad things together? It's true that only trouble is interesting in storytelling. People only want to hear about things that go wrong. But if those things that go wrong aren't linked to a central theme, then it just sounds like somebody is rattling off a bunch of trouble. And we finally landed on the reason that all of these things, the things that they had in common, is that they were all making Josephine feel inadequate. As soon as we turned that corner, the light bulb went off, and then all of those things got shaped. It's like putting it into a mold, almost. Okay, you felt inadequate about yourself, and then all these things were lining up to reinforce that. And then finally, in Sparta, North Carolina, you had this epiphany, realization that you were enough, and that gives a shape to the story. So that's just one example.
Well, you know, said.
Yeah, I mean, the themes are really pretty universal. I mean, yeah. Rejection.
Vulnerability.
Love, loss, vulnerability, not feeling enough. I mean, in Allison's case, not every one of us experiences something like that, right. That traumatic. But the basic theme of the story. So people, I think, can relate to other stories because we all have similar experiences for the most part.
But yeah, what I want to talk about for a second is what makes a story a story. So something happens to a person, and that's just a situation. But what Nick did with Josephine is he helped her find the meaning in those series of situations. And that elevated this anecdote, or a series of anecdotes, as Nick put it, into a story that had meaning. It was a story about not being enough.
Must there be profound emotion in these stories?
Yes, or else no one cares. And this is something we talk about. What's much easier, I think, for me with Writing Class Radio is I have 9 weeks to work with our storytellers to edit, and then they rework, and then they come back to class, and then we talk, and then we edit again. What Nick has to do is to go with 8 storytellers is do that in 3 weeks. So it's a really quick process of asking your storytellers, like, what is the real reason you acted the way you acted? What's underneath this situation? What's the emotional, what's at stake? And we talk about this all the time in Writing Class Radio and in class. But there's an example, one of our episodes I was thinking about. There's one that's specifically about what are the stakes? And I actually tell a story on that one. And can I tell it really quickly now?
Sure.
At my wedding, while I was telling my vows, I'm like, Victoria, I love you so much. My 80-year-old uncle dropped dead. He actually didn't die, but he fell to the ground. Everything was cleared. The ambulances came. And this was something that I told a ton of people after the fact, like, oh my God, someone died at my wedding, came back to life, but someone died at my wedding. And people kept saying, you have to write about that. You have to write about that. And I was like, why? And it took me a while to figure out what the story was. Now, I mentioned earlier that I like a big audience. So I'm someone who likes to be listened to. And here I was telling, like, delivering the most important speech of my life, and no one was listening. there was a moment where I was seriously, I was saying it, and I could tell, like, I could tell that, like, all attention shifted, and I'm really sensitive to that. So I'm like, I love you more. Thank you so much for letting me be the best me. And I'm like heartbroken.
So that's a story within the story.
Well, the story that I ended up writing was the story about wanting attention, mm-hmm. and not getting it during the most important speech of my life. It's an anecdote that someone died in the middle of my vows, but it's a story about me needing attention and not getting it in that moment.
So there's always got to be a personal revelation, would you say, associated with it?
Well, yeah, I think so. The narrator needs to learn something, or the narrator needs to bring meaning to the story. And sometimes that meaning is bigger than their own personal revelation. Like sometimes the story is about something in the world, for instance. But we're talking about personal stories, and we're usually talking about personal revelations.
One thing to ask yourself when you're listening to something, to sort of like, is it a story on the story meter? Does something change from the beginning of that story to the end? And I think in both cases today, the stories you heard, that yes, something did profoundly change. Nothing's ever quite the same if you're telling a story.
Do you perform stories at Live Service?
I have,
Nicholas?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always say the power of storytelling. All you have to do is know that I met my wife at a lip service after party after telling a story that I thought was so outrageous that I think I told Andrea that this story will guarantee, I was single, this story will guarantee that I don't meet somebody. And there in the audience was my future wife. So I don't know if that's an anecdote or a story.
Well, I think the moral of that story or anecdote is the more personal you are, the more you reveal, the more you connect with people.
And here's the paradox. The more specific your story, like the details, you know, someone close to you passes away, you don't get selected as to play Gloria Estefan. That's never going to happen to me. What happened to Josephine? But the more specific you are, the more universal the story becomes, because we all say, oh, man, yeah, I have felt that.
Let's just give out some information before the show comes to a close.
You probably stirred up some interest in some of our listeners.
Yeah, so first let's talk about Writing Class Radio. Contact information, when the classes are, how long they are, and go ahead.
Okay, Andrea. So anyone can sign up for the community class that's happening in October. And to do that, email info@writingclassradio.com. And that's a three-part, it's three classes.
Two hours each,
yes.
And when you say anybody can...
It's open to the community.
As opposed to
the class that gets recorded for the podcast. That class is by invitation only.
Okay.
And that class is actually filled right now. And there's a pretty significant waiting list for that class, which is interesting, like, you know, because it's recorded, but people still want to get into that class.
Now, how many are your stories also limited in time?
We're not as limited. Sometimes an episode will have one story and it might be longer than 8 minutes, but they're usually probably less than 15.
Okay.
We have to move on to lip service.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
But I want to say that if you can't get into the class, you can listen to Writing Class Radio anywhere you get podcasts, including writingclassradio.com.
And you can write on the daily prompts.
Oh, and you can write. Yeah, we have there's daily prompts on our website that people give and receive feedback every day. It's so cool.
Okay, and Nicholas Garnett, lipservicestories.com.
Upcoming events.
The big one is the show itself, November 17th at part of Miami Book Fair in the lineup. But if I can please make a pitch, the show is only as good as the stories that we receive. So we encourage everyone to submit a story to submissions at lipservicestories.com. And you go to the website, you'll see the guidelines. But really, the submission period runs through October 16th. So please send us your story.
Okay, so that's Andrea Askewitz, executive producer, teacher, co-host of the podcast Writing Class Radio. She's also a full-time mom. She's an author and a creator of Lip Service. Her stories have appeared in the New York Times, Salon.com, many other publications as well. Her latest memoir is Attention Horror. And Nicholas Garnett is a producer of Lip Service, an editor and writer, adjunct professor of creative writing at FIU, and a frequent instructor for Miami Book Fair International. And that's lipservicestories.com. It's writingclassradio.com. And Allison Langer, also co-founder, co-host of Writing Class Radio. Allison, thank you so much, too. And Josephine Phoenix, singer-songwriter, instrumentalist. Thank you so much, Josephine. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This program was produced by Richard Ives, technical direction from online content producer Jason Zapka. Polly Landis is associate producer. And if you want to hear the whole hour, it's easy to download free audio archives from our website, WLRN.org. Tomorrow, we have a return visit with FIU Advertising and Communications Professor Margot Berman. She tells us about today's often unnoticed techniques of pervasive persuasion in our everyday lives. Also, more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page, and we have the iTunes podcast. This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. For Bonnie Berman, stay tuned for special Hurricane Harvey coverage in Texas, live from NPR News.